Hello and welcome to the St. Andrew's Society of Los Angeles podcast. Each episode will bring you the latest news from the St. Andrew's Society of Los Angeles, as well as fascinating interviews with entertainment personalities, government leaders, and community advocates. St. Andrew's Society of Los Angeles, where Scotland meets the City of Angels. Let's get started. And welcome to another great episode of the St. Andrew's Society of Los Angeles' podcast. I'm your host, Joanna, and today we have an amazing show lined up for you. First, I'd love to introduce you to our guest moderator for the day, St. Andrew's Society of Los Angeles member, Carolyn Sykes. Australian-American harpist, she has been performing for many years and has established her private teaching studio here in California called Pacific Harps. Again, please welcome Carolyn Sykes. And our guest today has been dubbed the Celtic Princess, Kate Target Adams. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I am great. Kate has performed for audiences at Stirling Castle, large crowds of over 10,000 people in China, performed for the Scottish Parliament, attended by Her Majesty the Queen, and even J.K. Rowling's launch of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince at Edinburgh Castle. Born in Edinburgh, educated at Oxford, where she began combining language and music, please welcome the incomparable Kate Target Adams.
Thank you so much. It's far too kind.
I'm very excited for this show. I'm a huge music person. So when I heard that both of you guys were going to be the guest moderator and my guest, I freaked out. I was like, oh, we have music and harps. And yes, amazing right now.
Well, we were very excited to be here. It sounds absolutely amazing. Going, oh, I'm just having an interview with Los Angeles today. It's very exciting.
Oh, well, and on our end, we're like, oh, we're interviewing New Zealand today.
We're all exotic.
We are. I wanted to ask you, Kate, what first drew you to the harp? This is a question that I always find very fascinating because something always draws us.
That's true. Well, I was lucky to be born in Edinburgh where there's an annual harp festival. So when I was 8, I went to do a course at Easter time for a week. And then when I was 9, I went back. And when I was 10, I went back. And then my family took me seriously enough and said, okay, let's start weekly classes. And I was very lucky that my teacher was Isabel Miras, who was a singer as well as a harp player. And that just worked for me. I often think about that because if I'd had a very technical harp teacher that was into the classical side, I would never have really blossomed with it. But because I could sing and play and combine those two elements, I really loved playing the harp.
So was she your inspiration to sing while you played?
I wouldn't have known it was possible, actually, otherwise. So, yes, definitely. And my family were always singing around the house. I have, you know, quite a lot of music in the other relatives of my family. What my uncle was a guitarist on Roxy Music. So there's a quite a strong musical element, but I was very lucky to be encouraged. And because you do need to be encouraged at a young age, I think, in order to have the confidence to do that.
Absolutely.
And then I grew with that skill as I grew older and realized that perhaps I did have a passion for it. And also I loved performing, which is something you don't know when you start.
So were your first performances with your family or for your family?
I would say they were for my family. My family had a bed and breakfast in the center of Edinburgh in a beautiful Georgian townhouse. And most mornings after breakfast, I was asked to play the harp for the guests. So I was always singing Auld Lang Syne at about 8:30 in the morning. Well, everyone was sober, I might add.
Right, unless they just stayed on up all through the night.
Yes, you never know.
Oh yeah, so Scotland was a real inspiration. That was your real
definitely
point.
The harp I play is technically called the Clazach. It's a Celtic harp. It's a lever harp. So it's about 4 foot high. And that was also very lucky for me because I can see the beautiful harps behind you, Caroline, are not always the transportable kind. But for me, I could, you know, get on a plane or a train or in the car, and I became a kind of traveling minstrel. So I really have enjoyed the travel part of my job, and I hadn't predicted that would be such a focal point.
So you're able to take your harp with you wherever you go?
Yes, definitely. Have harp, will travel.
On the plane, you've got a hard trunk for it, and you can check it in underneath with the luggage.
That's right. I did once travel to America with a seat for the harp, because at that time my client said they would pay for a seat. Mm-hmm. But that was it was very complex. And I was in transit for maybe 3 hours. And, you know, no one's going to look after a great big package in an airport for you. So you can't actually even kind of sidle into the bathroom easily. You know, it was really much more trouble than it's worth. So now I just pack my harp into the hold. And I'm pretty lucky. Seems to always arrive in one piece at the other end. So far, so good. Touch wood.
Right. So who made your harp? I mean, I'm personally really interested in this question because I have a room full of harps and they're made by different manufacturers. And so it's part of my life to look at different harps and different manufacturers. And it's fascinating to me.
Yeah. So Isabel Maris, my teacher, played a pilgrim harp. And then I started on a pilgrim harp, and they were really sweet, almost very personable, like family style. And so they really supported me also through my career. And so it's made from an aphromosia wood, a very soft wood that comes from Africa originally. And they've got a very warm, tender tone, I would say, a pilgrim harp. So that's my 4 foot size harp, is a Celtic harp. Comes from England, though. They are from Godstone in Surrey. But
I know the pilgrim people.
Yes, they're lovely
people. They've helped me out before too.
Oh, good. And then I do have a mini harp that is even more transportable, and that's a harpsichord harp. And so I do love those ones for the ability to kind of, you wear it almost like a guitar. I can walk around. It's very, very flexible. So I like having the combination of the two, because even within a performance, I might sometimes start on one harp and bring the other harp out for variety.
Oh, I'd love to see that. I'd love to see that.
I've got a quick question for you. You said that you used to play at your parents' bed and breakfast. Now, when you told them that you wanted to play the harp, was there kind of like an eyebrow raise to that? Or did it just seem like a natural, hey, I want to play the harp? And they said, okay. That's fine.
Well, it's a very good question. I think actually my mom had masterminded the whole thing, because she had always dreamed that her daughter would play the harp.
Oh.
So I actually started on the piano, and at the age of 7, so after I'd been playing for a year, my piano teacher sat me and my mom down and said, I don't think she's going to make it. She's just no good. And it was really lucky that she did that. While, you know, my mom was offended, it actually opened up the world of the harp to me, because I would never have gone looking for another instrument. But it was so lucky, because I have been blessed with quite a unique instrument. Whereas there's a lot of people who would have been way more talented than me playing the piano in the world. And so my teacher was absolutely right. And I do feel that everybody has a different instrument within them. Just because you try one thing and you're not good at it doesn't mean you shouldn't start on another. And even for me, the singing and playing was the magic combo. As I mentioned, I wouldn't have been a classical harpist. I tried the oboe shortly after I'd kind of got on with the harp, because I thought, oh, maybe I can play another wind instrument. But then I fainted in the first class. So, you know, I really feel whether it's the triangle or the trombone or, you know, the spoons, you got to experiment, because everybody's got an instrument within them, I think. But it's hard to find that one. You might not be able to just find it instantly, but keep looking. How about you, Joanna? Do you play something?
No, I played clarinet as a kid and was fine with that. And after that, I said, okay, I'm good. I'm done. But I have a huge appreciation for music. I love music of all kinds. Actually, I run an online radio station, so my whole life is music. So I listen to music how music, like how musicians play, listen to music. I listen to music that same way. So no, I'm good in my place in all of that. Let me be a fan. Let me listen for technical reasons, but to play, not my thing.
Lovely. I was just wondering when you were talking, well, you mentioned other instruments. Harp is your main instrument and singing, but do you play other instruments?
Or I failed at the piano, failed at oboe, so then I just decided, you know what, let's just focus on the harp and the voice. And in a way, I do feel like it's combining two instruments together.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think that's the happy place for me. I'm actually not that comfortable playing the harp without singing, and I'm not that comfortable singing without playing the harp. So I definitely found my sweet spot or my comfort zone. And yes, for me, I think what I enjoy doing is playing different styles of music on the harp and trying to show people that the harp can be more varied than people necessarily think. A lot of people have a narrow impression of a harp being inside an orchestra. So I really enjoy making it a solo instrument, a performance instrument, and just taking people on a journey that way.
Far off in sunlit places, sad are the Scottish faces, yearning to feel the kiss of sweet Scottish rain, where tropic skies are beaming, love sad. The heart a dreaming, longing and dreaming for the homeland again.
So, how would you describe your styles of playing?
I think I might describe it as international because I don't really fit into the folk scene or the classical scene, but I really love to learn songs from different cultures. So whenever I travel, I try and learn a song from that country. So I now can sing in Japanese, Korean, Maori, all kinds of different languages. And to me, that's a way to show my appreciation when I go abroad, but also to expand my own musical style and repertoire.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. And do you feel that that music brings together cultures, music and art brings together cultures?
Absolutely.
Crosses boundaries.
Yes. And I do have an example of that. When I really realized that was when I was traveling in China. And wherever you go in China, you'll hear in the lift or in the supermarket, Auld Lang Syne. And Auld Lang Syne, of course, is a Scottish song. But in China, they actually think it's Chinese because it's got the pentatonic scale. It sounds very pleasing to the ear, I think, of somebody in China as well as somebody in Scotland. And so I really was impressed how that song has traveled to a whole other continent. And really, it does, that song in itself brings people together because it's about a group of people coming together, taking a drink, remembering times gone by, and it's about friendship. So really that hit it home for me when Scottish songs can travel and also even become an integral part of another culture.
Well, speaking of Auld Lang Syne, and because that's started to become a little bit of a thread through our conversation, you mentioned playing it in the morning at the bed and breakfast. And I was wondering, do you prefer to play for small, intimate audiences or big crowds, big auditorium and stadium crowds. Do you like the huge roar of the crowd, or do you like the intimate appreciation of people?
Yeah, that's a good question. I actually love the small, intimate crowds. It's a little more scary in a way because you can see everyone's faces. And then they're just looking at you expectantly. And, you know, this is make or break, you know. But what I love about that is the opportunity to connect, to really touch somebody more deeply. You're able to feel the energy from the audience as well. And I love communicating. I love telling stories about the songs, hopefully making the audience laugh. I'm the kind of musician that will give a show, I would say. I don't just sit in a corner and play the harp. I stand and play. And I really love that connection with the audience. And I feel it's much more palpable with a small, intimate audience. How about for you, Carolyn? I'm curious, what kind of an audience do you love?
Oh, well, I've played both, and I think I probably prefer the intimate audience too, for the same reasons that you can connect individually with each person. Yeah. It's quite fun to play for a big crowd, but you really can't see anybody. You're just feeling a wave of the energy coming back to you. I've also played quite a lot, which you may or may not have done, a lot of background music events. Mm-hmm. And I felt that nobody's listening. There was a time when I thought, oh, nobody's listening. What am I doing here? I'm wallpaper music. Mm-hmm. I may as well just, you know, put a boombox on or something and walk away, and they wouldn't even know the difference. Mm-hmm. And one day somebody came up to me at one of these events and she said, you know, I was at another event that you played last year for this same company, these same people, and you played this one song. I have no idea what it was. I didn't remember it at all. And she said, I was having such a bad day and it just completely helped me. It was incredible. She said, I just sat down and I had a little cry and I listened to your song and I felt so much better. And after that, I realized that you just don't know how your music's going to land, where it's going to land, who it's going to land on and who it's going to touch, and that it's my job to just give out the most that I can give, regardless of whether I think I'm wallpaper music or not.
Totally agree. And,
yeah. But it is nice to play for a smaller group that's actually listening and to be able to see how it lands.
That's true.
Rather than just anonymously trusting that it is going to land.
I think what you touched on there with the energy, as I get older, I realize more that it is an exchange of energy. And that's the special part, because you can't really see it, but you can somehow feel it. And then, yes, people would leave, as you say, feeling happy or even sad, but it's touching somebody without even touching them physically. Yes. That is the special part.
I've got a quick question for you. Especially with harp music, because a lot of people tend to think of harp music and they just think of classical, or think of something that's, especially the younger generation, thinks of something that's kind of way out of touch. And I've noticed it a lot more recently, kind of with the advent of people using the harp when they're doing cover songs of different modern songs and things like that. Have you found that people are kind of looking at you towards, hey, I would like to see if you do a cover of this particular song? And have you done covers of popular songs yet?
Yeah, so that's also a very interesting point, because I do want to make the harp more contemporary. And I want people to have a different impression. I mean, the guitar plays everything. Why shouldn't the harp play everything? So, yeah, I do perform jazz. I do perform pop songs. I had to do Ellie Goulding's Love Me Like You Do. Whatever people will request, I will be like, yes, I can do that. And then I go, how am I going to do that? But then you find a way, don't you? Where there's a will, there's a way. So I enjoy the challenge of that. And And it is important, as you say, in order to connect with a younger audience. And it's funny, if you do play a pop song on the harp, then people like do a double take because it's just not what they've expected. And I quite enjoy the surprise element of giving something to somebody that they didn't expect.
That actually leads to another question. What is the most requested song that you get?
Well, I'm not sure that it's the most requested because I'm not sure people even make special requests. But I think people often do comment afterwards that they loved the Gaelic songs that I play. And that's obviously the Highland language of Scotland. And I think it's because the Gaelic songs have a very ethereal quality, something quite deep about them. And even if you don't understand what the song is about, it doesn't actually matter too much because you can feel it. You can feel the depth and the emotion. So one song that I really love singing as well is Ferravata, and that means my boatman. And it was written by a lady at the end of the 19th century. And it was about her fishermen going out to sea night after night on the stormy Scottish seas. And she was worried if he would come home safely to her. So the song is filled with a lot of longing, the sound of the waves. And I think even if people don't understand it, they can really gain the emotion and the power of the song. So I would probably say if I had to pick one, then it would be My Boatman, Ferravata.
I was sure you were going to say Auld Lang Syne.
Well, got to vary it up a little bit. Otherwise, people will think I only play Auld Lang Syne.
That's right.
Actually, with Auld Lang Syne, just while we're on the topic, there's the most beautiful old version, and that's the version I really enjoy playing. It's the original version that Robbie Burns wrote the lyrics for, and it's very nostalgic and moving. I can see why they had to rebrand it and do a upbeat New Year's version. But the version I play is actually a really lovely slow song, actually.
I'm looking forward to hearing that.
Yes, me too.
Just to change the topic a little bit, how has this pandemic affected you and your playing and your touring?
Well, it's meant that I've stayed in one place for over 6 months, which is very unusual for me. And it's also meant that I've stayed in New Zealand, which is also quite unusual for me. It's been an interesting time from the point of view that I never really stand still. So I started an online business in China with TikTok. So I've started a channel on the Chinese version of TikTok where I sing on the harp all the English children's nursery rhymes. And I did that with my son, who's now 4. And when we started, he was 3. And we were doing about 4 or 5 songs a week. In fact, we did get burnt out.
Mama, black sheep, have you any wool? Yes, sir, 3 bags full. One for the master and one for the dame. One for the little boy who lives down the lane.
One point. But we were recording, everything from, I don't know, Little Bo Peep outside, and we were finding all different kind of areas around where we live to go and record in order to really connect with the Chinese audience. And also it was a lovely way to allow my son to learn a lot of songs and to keep his musical element going while he wasn't at school or doing any other substantial learning.
So do we over here in America and in the rest of the world, do we have access to this TikTok?
Well, yes, I would love to share it with you because the funny story is in China, I've got about 120,000 followers now, but on the English, on the Western version, the English language version, I've got about 13 followers. it'd be lovely to boost it with a few more because we've definitely covered I think every nursery rhyme I can think of, but if there are some that you spot that are missing, then I would love to record those. I'd love to hear from anyone who knows a good nursery rhyme that has not been done yet.
So speaking of recording, have you had the opportunity to record any new albums? Or is that something that you still do, or is your recording gone in a different direction?
Well, that's an interesting one, because the other day I was giving a concert here in New Zealand just 2 days ago, and the musicians, very talented Celtic musicians from the south of New Zealand, were telling me that they've got a recording studio and we could probably do a new recording. So it is time. Mm-hmm. And now there is the space to do it, because you can get so busy with traveling to gigs and the next one and organizing and that you can almost ignore the fact that you should probably be getting on with something like a recording, because obviously they are meaty projects. But I think I'm just starting to wake up to the fact that now might be a good time to do the next one.
And so how many CDs do you have already, and how would we be able to get our hands on them?
Well, I do sell them on my website. I would say I have recorded quite a few things in my time, but maybe there's about two or three now that I would probably be happy to sell, because as my music's gone on and my voice has matured, then you listen back to the original ones and you feel you've at least developed since then. But yes, I have a collection of Scottish lullabies. I have a small EP that has different international songs on. And so I'd love to share those with you. Yes, also on Spotify. And yes, so that's right.
iTunes, all the usual suspects.
Yeah, that's right. Just put my name in, it should come up. Thank you.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. So is there a person that you've always wanted to perform for but haven't had the opportunity to? Or in your, you know, if we were could have anything we wanted in your wildest dreams, what would it be?
I actually think it might be a place rather than a person. And the reason I say that is, as I've grown older, I found that places, even more so than the people, give me a really deep sense of wonder when I'm playing in them. Because I think, for example, let's say somebody wanted to perform in Carnegie Hall. There's such a legacy that place has. The people come and go, but the place has a feeling and an energy. And I used to perform in Edinburgh Castle a lot. And I ended up thinking, wow, I feel a real connection with Edinburgh Castle. And there I was, you know, driving through the portcullis in my car with my harp in the back. And I felt very close to Edinburgh Castle. So I would actually say I would love to perform at the White House one day. That would be a dream.
Wow.
That would be awesome.
Yes, it would. It would. I've had that same dream myself.
Have you?
You never know.
We can duet.
That would be a huge honor. That would be a huge honor at any time to do a duet with you, Kate. Yeah.
Well, here's one question, and I guess it's still kind of the giant elephant in the room with everybody, especially in the music industry, and kind of going back to COVID. And I know you said you just played a show the other week, but how has, as far as being able to play venues and things like that, has that really been affecting you as an artist? And are there areas out there that's kind of in the same boat where it's they're in danger of closing, and are you guys dealing with that issue out there in New Zealand as well?
Well, it's definitely been an unusual year. Of course, I was living and performing all around Asia for the last 12 years. So my actual home, I would say now, is Hong Kong, but there is no work there and there are no performances. And while I could have maybe done online gigs, I feel very much that going back, that exchange of energy, I really love being in the room with the audience and that sense of the live feel I couldn't find online myself. So the reason why I think I would stay at least for until 2021 in New Zealand is because we're very lucky here. People are traveling there. I went to Auckland. I went on a plane for the first time in 6 months, a couple of weeks ago to perform. And yeah, it felt like a very special experience again. And there are concerts coming up here. So I'm looking forward to performing live because I think that's really where I can add value, and that's really where I can touch people most. I mean, normally I want to make people happy with my music, but when somebody comes up to me at the end of a performance and says they cried, then I know I've done my job because I've touched them. And I just don't know if I could do that through a screen.
Artists do have a special connection with the audience. So it is very difficult to participate in an online virtual thing because there is this kind of third wall that's there now that is hard to break. It is hard to kind of crack through. So I commend you for sticking to, no, I'll just play live shows and figure it out from there.
Yes. And actually, you know, when you said the elephant in the room, I thought you were going to say, why don't you sound Scottish? I have to say that I was born in Edinburgh, I grew up there, but I don't sound Scottish, but I do have a lot of freckles. So maybe that can make
it. Lovely.
It's there. It's like, it's super deep. It's there. But like, you can kind of hear, it's like, oh, okay, she's not from New Zealand. That part I can get. So I think that it's kind of there still. Like it's in that way that Midwestern people try to lose some of their accents out here when they go in other places and they can't, because there's still certain words that you just say with an accent. Yours is still kind of there. It's just very buried, but it is
somewhere deep down inside.
I want to tell you about something that we have in a journal out here that you might have come across called the Harp Column. It's a journal for harpists. And it used to have a segment, I haven't seen it for a while, but it used to have a segment called Strange But True Harp Stories. And people would send in their experiences, harpists would send in their experiences of strange and unusual things that had happened to them while they were playing or happened with their harp. And I was wondering if you had any strange but true harp stories.
Oh, yeah, I do have a few. Definitely. One that I was just chatting about with somebody the other day was when I was performing in the small St. Margaret's Chapel in Edinburgh Castle at a very intimate wedding ceremony, and they had candles everywhere because it was just such a beautiful setting. And I'm always up at the front if I'm playing at a wedding ceremony, and the priest was right in front of me, and his cassock caught fire with the candles, and I'm playing the harp, and then I was thinking, what should I do? Should I start like hitting a priest? That feels wrong as well. And luckily, by the time the flames had, well, not luckily, but the flames got big enough that other people noticed. So I didn't have to kind of tackle the priest. But that was an unusual experience. Playing for J.K. Rowling was a pretty cool experience too, because everybody was in the Great Hall of Edinburgh Castle. And then they said, every adult has to go because J.K. Rowling is going to read to the children. We don't want any adults there. And I had been in this huge cape, you know, playing the harp. And I felt like I was in this invisibility cloak because they didn't ask me to leave. So I was still there. And I kind of felt like saying, I'm an adult. But of course, I didn't want to be kicked out. So I got to listen to J.K. Rowling read as along with all the other children, as every other adult, apart from the TV crew, were kicked out. So that was pretty special too. So yeah, you do get to see a lot of weird and wonderful things as harpists. You do.
That is so cool. That is awesome.
Well, we could do a whole program on you just telling stories about
random harp stories.
Performances. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you both so much for taking the time out today to speak with us. It's been an absolute pleasure. Do you want to give your website so that people can get your CDs, find out what's going on with you, and also your TikTok?
Oh, thank you. That's very kind. Well, it's www.kfortargetadams.com. So kt-a.com. And I will find out the TikTok for you, but I think it would just be Kate Target Adams if you type that in. That'd be wonderful. And I look forward to hearing from the listeners and the viewers, because really, for me, connection with everybody else is the important part about music, and reaching to other communities is the way that I love to make music. So I look forward to hearing from you.
Can people contact you through your website?
Yeah, yes. If you drop an email there, then that will come through to me eventually. So I would love to, just love to really hear Scottish stories, hear any stories, because I think that's what you were mentioning earlier, Carolyn, is that music does really unite cultures and bring people together in weird and wonderful ways. And I think that for me has been the magic of being a musician. It's always an interesting journey, and no two performances are ever the same. And the way you connect with different people, as you say, it always means something different to somebody. You don't know how they're listening, but they're listening in some form or other. So it's a special connection.
Yeah.
That is fantastic. And Carolyn, thank you so much for being our guest moderator today. We really appreciate it. And you have brought so much wealth of information to the show today. It has definitely touched my heart. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Joanna. Thank you, Carolyn.
It's been a delight. It's been really a delight.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Thank you both.
Again, you are listening to and watching the St. Andrew Society of Los Angeles' podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe to our podcast. And we look forward to seeing you on our next episode. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the St. Andrew Society of Los Angeles podcast. For more information on the St. Andrew Society of Los Angeles, visit www.standrewsla.org. And don't forget to like our Facebook page, Instagram, and YouTube channels as well. Have a great week, and we'll see you next episode.